The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Well, that old moon up in there in the sky seems a lot closer than it used to be. For years, man has looked at that moon. He's gotten romantic about it. He's even thought that maybe it bothered his mind. We used to call people lunatics, meaning they were lunar struck or moon struck because they had a mental problem. But somehow, that old orb up in the sky seems a lot closer today when we realize the latest achievement of science and space age technology of a soft landing on the moon. And now, with that apparatus up there and the latest successful space shot on the part of the United States space program taking intricate pictures of the moon's surface, another successful lunar landing, a soft landing, we can't help but applaud the fantastic knowledge and the advancement in space age scientific knowledge of modern mankind. You're living in a fantastic age, an age of the advancement of knowledge at an incredible pace. An age of achievement beyond belief. A few years ago, if someone had told you would be living in what is virtually the space age, you would have laughed. You would have said, that is incredible, it's impossible, I simply don't believe it. And now, when we hear of man being able to send a rocket to the moon and to cause a sort of a long framework out of aluminum, an apparatus, to turn itself around by means of various rockets, and then to lower itself to the lunar scape at about 3 miles an hour to only a few feet above that moon's surface, and then to land by just collapsing the last few feet with specially designed legs that sort of honeycombed and fell apart and kind of allowed themselves to be crushed as it lit on the surface, even equipped with a little sort of a scoop shovel to bring back, if they can successfully do that, and of course that is something now we're wondering about, to bring back soil samples or samples of the rock and the dust of the lunar surface. If someone had told you you would be reading of such an accomplishment, you virtually would have laughed. Now, when you hear of men at the JPL laboratories in Pasadena, California, leaping to their feet and cheering wildly at such a fantastic accomplishment, you can't help but marvel at the achievements of man. But my friends, in spite of all the advancements of scientific and technological knowledge today, in spite of the vast accomplishments in this space age of ours, we still do not know, for all our knowledge, the answers to the biggest questions of all. And the oldest questions, the questions that have been asked from the time of Galileo and way back before, questions that have plagued mankind from B.C. and beyond. Who are we, what are we, and why are we on this earth? Here we are trying to get to the moon, trying to learn more about, trying to virtually conquer our solar system, thinking that maybe men will be going into the stars and beyond, into the corners of our galaxy and maybe to other galaxies in the foreseeable future, spaceships that might have generations of people living and being born and dying on board as they take incredible journeys into space. Here we are trying to learn more about space and the beyond. And yet, for all our finding out, for all our increased knowledge, for all of our advancement in technology, we still do not know the answers to the biggest questions of all. What are we? Why are we here? Where are we going? Just what is the purpose of your own personal life? No one seems to know. Religionists can't give you the answer. Evolutionists don't even believe in any purpose, but believe in happenstance and caprice. Philosophers can't tell you. You don't know. Some of the leading religious people on the face of the earth clearly admit they don't even know that God exists, don't know how to prove it, and don't therefore know what you exist for, don't know what your purpose in living really is. But here we are with a world of advancing knowledge, of giant intellectual institutions like the Think Factory on the Hudson River, where a sort of a brain trust is gathered together to think of bizarre and strange new ideas to create peace on this war-filled earth of ours, where proliferation of knowledge is at an ever-increasing pace, the breakdown of the proverbial and traditional barriers to understanding and knowledge among nations such as race and increased travel, and now the language barriers tumbling as well. And at the same time, we seem to be more in the dark than ever about the biggest and the most important questions of all. You're living in a world that is rife with suicide, a world filled with war and the threat of more wars, A world where the death of prominent persons sometimes takes us by surprise. A world of tumbling, changing government. A world of ferment. A world with a giant problem of the population explosion. The problems of Red China and Vietnam. The festering sore that war has proved to be to the United States. The threat of more problems in Central and South America. This world that is so rife with problems we increasingly call insoluble, that we don't know how to solve, we don't know the answers. And yet here we are trying to get to the moon. It does make you wonder. Well, where do you stand in the midst of it all, my friends? Just what is this life to you? Where are you going? In a series of programs on the world tomorrow, I have offered 7 proofs. I've come to the 5th one now of the existence of an all-wise creator God. But can God's existence actually be proved? You've never seen God. You've never heard his voice. You've never seen his shape. You yourself might say to yourself, you can't prove it. And you're not alone, because most of the leading ministers say they can't prove it. As a matter of fact, they claim the Bible doesn't even prove it. And that's a remarkable thing to say. And so in this series of broadcasts, I've been offering 7 major proofs. One by one, step by step, and inviting you to write in for this booklet, Does God Exist?, and the one entitled The Proof of the Bible. It will show you there are tangible and scientific proofs that God does exist. But when you ask the average person, do you personally believe in a God, he will probably answer, well, yes, he does. But what kind of a God? Well, let them answer for themselves. Here's the result here of a Gallup poll that I have before me. 97% of Americans in a recent Gallup poll answered that they did believe in a God of sorts. Of course, each of these people go to a different kind of a church, not maybe 97 in a different church each time, but let's say divide them up among Catholic, Protestant, and Jew, and then all the various divisions in each of these, and you would have a cross-section of modern-day American life. The same thing would hold true generally in Britain, the Commonwealth countries of Australia, of Canada, and so on. But 97% of them claimed that they believed in God. 2% said they were agnostic, just seemingly to say that they do not know. And 1% said they are outright atheists. Apparently all but an insignificant minority of Americans would assert belief in God, but they were anything, this poll discovered, but unanimous in their beliefs about that God, in what he is like, how big is he, where is he, what is his purpose. And the distinctions are not only sharp between individuals, but equally sharp between various of the large church organizations. For instance, when questioning people in one major Protestant faith, only 41% of them indicated an unquestioning faith in a personal God. Can you imagine that? But 59% of them didn't really have an unquestioning faith in a personal God, yet they were weekly, church-going, professing Christian people. Now, for various center denominations, that statistic rose to 75%. And for some of the fundamentalist groups in the South, 90% indicated they did have faith in a personal God. So it depends upon where you are and what is your brand of religion. Now, some of the questions that were asked to question and answer columnists recently and the answers that were given revealed how deep-seated is this doubt and the dilemma and the personal frustration that people experience with these biggest questions of all. What are they, and why are they alive? And is there a God, and does he have a purpose in your life? And can you discover that purpose? The question was, does the Bible give any proof of the existence of God? Asked one writer to a newspaper. Although I have asked many believers to explain God to me, I have never been satisfied with their answers. Please explain God so that I can believe. The answer the columnist gave was, columnist, not communist. Some people become confused. Actually, the Bible does not offer formal proof for the existence of God. God is not found at the end of a logical process, but rather the Bible assumes his existence. Now, that's a remarkable statement. A book assumes his existence, which says, I am and there is none else. And where is the house that you will build unto me? All these things have my hands made. A book that says, I am and there is none before me, that I am the first, that I am the last, that I am the beginning and the end, that I am the creator God and that I made all things. That's an amazing statement, but it shows you to whom people look for their authority. Now, who is an authority is the question today. We like to quote authorities. We like to quote people with degrees after their name. I get letters once in a while, a rather illiterate letter. One came in I was particularly disgusted at because a so-called PhD was trying to explain to me all about DNA. And the poor fellow could hardly write. He scribbled something in lead pencil, and he went to great lengths to stretch out his PhD so it covered about an inch and a half. I was tempted to write back a letter and to sign my PhD on it, but I thought, why bother? And it was remarkable to me to see that people have such a desire to quote one another and to use the authority of another man, someone who is a product of a university, and you wonder about that degree, you know, sometimes. You wonder, well, where did he get it? And what did he do to receive it? And what does he really know about, as they say, the price of putty after all? But here was a person trying to set me straight about a certain chemical problem. And you know, people say, well, now, I want to quote an authority. Well, when you analyze it, who is the authority you would most likely quote? Well, the person with whom you agree. The person with whom you might agree in his views. You might go to a certain reference work and you find, say, six or seven men that endorse one view, and eight or ten or 12 men that endorse a completely opposing view. But the first view is the one that appeals to you, and so you quote these first men as your authority. Have you ever studied into a Bible help, such as a commentary or a Bible encyclopedia? That's exactly what they do, you know. They line up a whole group of men. You might have six, eight, or a dozen men that hold this view about a certain section of the Bible, and an equal large number of men that hold a completely opposing view, and then, like as not, a third or a fourth school of thought. And their names, and maybe their degrees, and their university might even be after their name. Dr. So-and-so, LLD. And so, if you want to make a rather pompous speech to a church group or your bridge club or something about such and such a view of Scripture, well, what you do is to amass your authorities, the ones that personally appeal to you, and you quote them. Well, you know, what we like to do is to ask the biggest authority of all, our neighbor, our friends, our relatives, our father and mother, or our brother and sister, or perhaps a member of our family. People do this all the time. It's remarkable. You see it in the Bible, examples where people would ask someone in a crowd, well, who is this? And someone would say, whoa, that? Well, that's John the Baptist, risen from the dead. Oh, thanks a lot for telling me. I'm really glad to get the straight of that. Actually, it was Jesus Christ. But this person was saying, well, it's John the Baptist. So Christ asked his disciples one time, just to illustrate that particular bent of human nature, and he said, who is it that men say that I am? And the disciples had heard all the tales, all the gossip, all the latest, the stories, and they said, well, some say you're Elijah, and some say you are Jeremiah, or another of the prophets, and some say that you're John the Baptist, and some say that you're this or that or the other person. And the point is, my friends, that just as sure as some said that, others believed it. That's the occasion, maybe you've heard it quoted before, maybe you haven't, but where Jesus turned to Peter and he said, and who do you say that I am? And he said, well, we say that you are the Christ, the Son of God. And he said, the Holy Spirit has given you that, not man. So we like to quote our authorities, and we like to appeal to authorities. And here were people writing, of all places, to a newspaper. Now, I think newspapers are necessary, but I just sometimes take newspapers with six or eight giant cubes of salt. Because I have been written up in newspapers, I've been quoted in newspapers, and I have never yet, in all of my experience with such quotations and stories, seen one paper that got the whole thing straight. I've seen some stories that were about 90% straight, but I have never yet seen one that was 100% straight. Now, I can only speak for myself, of course. That's my own personal experience out of several dozen newspaper articles. I can't say that that means that every other article in the newspaper is equally as garbled and as upside down as the ones that were talking about me. But it does make me wonder, and sometimes there is many a slip between the copy reader and the typesetter and the one that puts it on the press, and you begin to wonder just how did it get that way. I well remember a fellow that had never even heard about the World Tomorrow program, a worldwide radio broadcast that spans the entirety of the globe, that is broadcast on a whole network of stations all over Australia and the Philippines and all over the United States and Canada, all over Europe, in parts of Africa, Central and South America, that is in the German language, the French language, and the Spanish language, that is in the English language, of course, daily and around the world, on the biggest and the prestige stations around the world. And he virtually had never heard it. I asked him, have you ever heard a broadcast? No, he'd never heard it. But he wanted to write for his readers in a local newspaper all about who and what I was and what I was doing. Well, have you any of our literature? No, he'd never read any of the literature. But he wanted to ask me some questions, so I consented. So I answered his questions. Once or maybe twice in the course of about a 20-minute discussion, he pulled out a little yellow scratch pad and he scribbled something. He took a picture with a Polaroid land camera and left. I have never seen such a slipshod, bumbled job of reporting. I would have kicked him out of freshman journalism. In Ambassador College, I really would have. Or remedial English, like as not. But now, I'm not picking on all newspapers. I'm just saying, for the moment, that since the average layman likes to quote an authority, we ought to make sure of our authority. Now, here's a person writing to a newspaper to find out. Now, look, I've asked religionists, I've asked preachers, I've asked my neighbors, what do you, the newspaper religious editor, have to say about it? And the religious editor had this to say, the Bible assumes his existence. And my friends, that is either a very well-intentioned and sincere error, or it is a very rank untruth, because the Bible does nothing of the sort. And I happen to be an authority on the Bible. That's a fact, and I will say so on the authority of Jesus Christ, because I know my Bible. Do I know every last little tiny answer of every vague prophecy in it? Oh my, no, I certainly don't. I know there are promises, however, that say that surely the Lord Eternal will do nothing but that he reveal his secret to his servants, the prophets. But 90-some percent of that Bible is absolutely crystal clear and open to the understanding of anyone who wants to research it and look into it. And I know the Bible does not assume the existence of God, but states it dogmatically. It propounds it. It is the leading exponent of it. It preaches it and teaches it. It states it over and over again and is the chronicle of the absolute death of dozens and hundreds of righteous people who gave their lives for that firm conviction in the belief of Almighty God. And all the writings of newspaper reporters and religious editors to the contrary, the Bible does not assume but states the positive existence of an all-wise creator God. Now, who is your authority, my friends, for what you believe, your ultimate authority? In other words, have you ever asked yourself, where did you get the things you believe, including that religious doctrine, scientific knowledge, personal philosophy of life, whatever it is you accept as your belief or your point of view or your approach to life, where did you get it? It's not unfair for you to ask that of yourself. You don't need to tell me the answer. I don't know you, as the old saying is, from Adam. And probably vice versa. But have you ever asked that to yourself and for your own personal research? It's about time you did, because the chances are what you believe about the Bible, you did not get out of the Bible, but from other people, and that could be quite dangerous. The chances are, if you have firm convictions, and you know, some people can get very glandular, they can get emotional, they can get excited about it, they can want to fight, they can want to argue. There have been more wars, more arguments, more fights, and more squabbles started over the Bible, over religion, mind you, and directly as a cause of religious endeavor, than for any other reason that I could point out of all of history. I firmly believe more people have died, bathed in blood in their own agony, in warfare, for so-called pseudo-religious motives, be they the holy wars of the Orient, or the crusades of yesteryear and medieval times, or even, believe it or not, World War II. For the idea that the Emperor of Japan is a direct descendant of the sun and these people owed it to themselves religiously to rule the world. And the idea of the fatherland of Germany and that they are the very bastion and bulwark of all Christianity, that they owe it to the world to usher in a German-made utopia, a 1,000 years Deutschland style for all the rest of the world. Sure, it was all religious motivation. Look at the weak recreation of the so-called Holy Roman Empire that Mussolini thought he was putting up. It's exactly what he did. He wanted religious blessing for it. So you begin to look at this and you assume, well, man, this thing of religious fervor can really get out of hand if it isn't controlled, can't it? People can get real excited about the Bible and about religion.
Well, it's about time you began to ask yourself why. What is the source of your belief? Do you know where you are going? What is your personal search? What is your personal quest in life? Where are you headed? The questions of life, of death, of the hereafter. The questions of your purpose in living, of your personal goal. The questions about why you go to your job and why you pay attention to your family and what this life is all about. These are questions that ought to be answered. Can you say that anyone is truly educated, regardless as to how much you might admire these JPL scientists and others, if he doesn't know what he is? Can you say anyone is truly intellectual, a pedant, if he understands all of these various technological and scientific things, but he has no knowledge of what and why he is, of why he draws breath, of what this human machine and mechanism is all about? How can anyone claim to be educated when he doesn't know who he is and what he is doing here? And the Bible is the source of that knowledge. The Bible is the revelation of God Almighty to man of that knowledge that man could not have otherwise discovered for himself. It is revealed knowledge. It's knowledge you can't get elsewhere. The Bible doesn't claim to be a textbook on science, but you can't view science correctly without it. The Bible doesn't claim to be a textbook on all of human history. It's written geographically and historically from the point of view of Jerusalem and Palestine, and ancient Egypt, and so-called ancient Babylon, and that area of the world, and of those other nations and peoples as they come in contact with the Hebrew people. But you cannot understand history unless you understand it from the view of the Bible. You can't. You can't understand geology, archaeology, paleontology, biology, zoology, any of the studies, unless you view it from the point of view of that basic knowledge, revealed knowledge that man couldn't have discovered for himself in the Bible. The Bible is the framework and the foundation of all knowledge, and any knowledge apart from and outside the Bible that is viewed without realizing the Bible, without accepting it, without believing it, is only so much wasted misknowledge put to a wrong purpose and is going to come to nothing. Now that's a fact, and you're going to live to see that proved. Well, another question that was asked of this newspaper editor was, what can I believe? I was raised in a very religious family. Of course, a lot of people are, especially in the south of the United States. Last fall, this student said, I moved here and enrolled as a freshman in a local college. Up to now, I never have questioned the faith of my fathers. Now, I doubt everything. Listen to this, Mr. and Mrs. World. This is what the educational institutions are doing to your sons and daughters. This is the first thing that happens to most college freshmen today. I don't care what their parents taught them. I don't care what their grandparents stood for and what religion and faith of their fathers they used to stand up and sing about. Before they have been in one of our modern God-rejecting, Bible-defying, atheistic, agnostic, doubting, skeptical institutions for very long, they will probably be saying with this freshman, now I doubt everything. They don't just doubt God and Christ. They doubt the government and the IRS, and they doubt the laws, and they doubt their mothers and fathers, and they doubt mores and laws and principles and standards and themselves. And they doubt the world, and they doubt the future, and they're just real professional doubters. They go about in a sort of a drop-out attitude, dropping out from life itself and all society around them, and the chances are decide to get dirty and grow a beard. And you see this type of person all around you today. So here's the letter from a young freshman. He enters a so-called institution of higher learning, and instead he has systematically hacked out from under him every foundation of knowledge he was ever given. Everything his parents sweated and slaved and strove to try to teach to him and to put into his mind as a young growing boy, he has completely hacked out of his mind in his first experience as an entering college freshman. I happen to know three colleges in the world that do not do that. Three colleges that challenge textbooks, that open young minds, and that ask them to challenge what the author had in mind, that ask them to prove the basics of all of life. Who are we, and what are we, and what is human life all about, and why are we here? And if there is no God, then you ought to be able to prove it, and you ought to be able to prove evolution. Now, Gnosticism means knowledge, but agnosticism means, hooray, we're ignorant, we're dumb, we don't know a thing, we've got no answers, our minds are a complete blank. And yet people want to somehow exalt ignorance today. They want to cloak ignorance and clothe it in a tuxedo with a flat black hat, maybe a long gown, and give it a degree and say, hooray, we rejoice, we're stupid, we're ignorant, we don't know. Well, I know three educational institutions, Ambassador Colleges in Pasadena, California, Big Sandy, Texas, and Brickettwood, England, that know better than that, and give entering freshmen hope and faith, and give them something to really stand upon and a platform of real knowledge instead of a lot of doubt. If you're going to doubt anything, then doubt that which is really doubtful. Don't doubt that which stands proved. Now, he said, one of my professors asks me questions about God and Christ. He smiles at my answers. That's the oldest dodge since the devil came down out of the tree, is to smile at the answer. If you can't disprove it, ridicule it, make fun of it, laugh it off, but know all the while you are a fool if you do. Know all the while you don't have the answers, you can't disprove it intellectually. The other students laugh. Well, that's fine. They laughed at Christ. They laughed and sneered at every one of his apostles. I know a lot of people laugh at this program. And of course, I suppose, I remember one time I was fishing, I think it was over at Lake Mead, and there was a place called Jackass Cove, and we were all going to fish there. It was out of Temple Bar. A group of us in two different boats went down there and said, we'll meet you at Jackass Cove. Well, we got down there to fish, and of all things, I didn't know they still had wild donkeys in the United States, but I found out why they named it that, because we heard this wild, derisive laugh. Looked up on the top of a ridge, and here was a wild burro up there, and he was just hee-hawing. Well, that sort of reminds you of the braying of people who have no other answer. They can't answer it, and so they just bray. They just laugh. And it's a pretty good analogy. Well, this student said, I've talked with girls in my residence hall. Half of them have lost their faith. You see what happens when young kids go to college today? They lose their faith. Is science really opposed to religion? The answer is no, it is not, if it's true science. If it is right science, there's no reason why zoology, ichthyology, paleontology, biology, microbiology, all of these various studies of these little microorganisms of our creation around us should oppose the Bible. No reason whatsoever. The two can be in perfect harmony if that science is true science. But when it gets into a lot of wild speculation about why and where these things came from and how they began, then it's no longer true science, but a lot of vague, dumb guesswork. Is there a God? Writes this student. Please help me. I'm in a whirlpool of doubt. Well, I hope that student is listening to this program because I can help him. Or her, I guess it is. Said it was a bunch of girls in the residence hall. And that is, if you write for the Plain Truth magazine and get these articles every single month absolutely proving the falsehood of evolution and substantiating and corroborating the Bible. The one in the current number is The Whale of a Tale or The Dilemma of Doubting Dolphins, showing you how dolphins and toothed whales could not have evolved and absolutely proving it. And here's another one for all college students and high school level students who are graduating. What colleges and universities do not tell you what higher education really costs and who really pays for it. The article on What Do You Mean? The Unpardonable Sin. Remember the booklets on Does God Exist? And the Proof of the Bible. And the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. They're free of charge, no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. The address again in just a moment. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.